everybody. This is Tracy, and I'm delighted you've joined me for this episode of Good Life Stories. I created this podcast because I believe we are all seeking connection, and what better way to do that than through story? So get ready. These stories are meant to suck you in. Welcome to Good Life Stories. Hey, everybody, this is Tracy Crowley, your host of Good Life Stories, and we are back with Krista Kirchmerick today, and she is going to talk about what it was like to receive an autism diagnosis as an adult and how that has impacted her day-to-day life and a lot of other things. Okay, so your last life story that you put down was a late life autism diagnosis.
Yes.
And she said, I love that you said, I joke that as usual, I was the last one to get the punchline. Most of your other family had figured it out. So tell me more about what led you to actually go get a formal diagnosis?
Seek out a formal diagnosis. I was in therapy. Yeah. And a lot of my life, especially since getting out of the military, had been in therapy. And even with therapy, I just didn't feel like I was getting it. Like there was something I'm missing. Why can't I be normal? You know, these things my therapists are talking about, I'm doing it, but I'm not getting the right results. I'm not getting the results.
You're not getting the results other people were getting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's the tool. Try the tool. Tool not working.
So I was 42, and I was coming up on 42. Bart was deployed to Afghanistan this time, and I really needed therapy because I didn't like being left behind.
Yeah.
I should be over here with him. But I had this really great therapist. She was very, very grounding, very patient with me. Yeah. And I had been seeing her for like 6 months. And I'd taken a few tests and we'd done a lot of talking. And then one day she says, have you considered that you might have Asperger's syndrome? And to this day, I still feel horrible about my reaction to that. My first reaction was, I'm not one of those people. I got up and I left her office. And I feel absolutely rotten about that to this day because my best friend's son is autistic. And I got to be there to hear his first word. And I knew that that was the result of a lot of internal issues.
Yeah.
So,
but it's also, the be kind to yourself because that was a therapy situation. And if you're feeling very vulnerable, hearing bad news. Oftentimes we just don't respond the way we expect to.
To me, it was bad news because I had a whole lot of preconceptions about what it meant to be autistic.
Yeah.
And then she tried to call me a couple times. I'd say, I'm fine. I'm not going to hurt myself. And I'd hang up the phone and
I'm okay.
I'm okay. Just leave me alone. And it took me about a month, I'd say, to go back to her. And we started talking about
what does this mean?
What does this mean? And again, while Bart was away, she and I had a lot of time to really explore what it meant to be autistic. And the way I eventually set it in my head is I don't like being called dysfunctional or disorder.
Yep.
I have a different operating system.
Yeah.
And the thing about autism is that it can look so different in every person. It's a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So I liken it to Linux.
Oh, yes. I love it. It's totally Linux.
It's totally Linux. Everybody that really knows, runs and uses Linux, no two setups will look the same.
Yep.
Whereas most people are running on, Windows, Mac, Android.
Yep.
So, and once I grasped that, once I put this on myself that I am running a different operating system, I am running a highly specialized operating system, that means it's not always going to be user-friendly. Just because it's not user-friendly doesn't mean it's broken. It just means you don't know how to use it.
Oh, I'm just trying to think of all the jokes I can come up with in my head about UI. Like the, you know, the...
Yeah, my UI is not always... My GUI is not always user-friendly.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Okay, but that's just, I wrote that down, the, you know, I run a different highly specialized operating system that is not always user friendly. I just, oh, that I, for all of my friends who are spurgy whatevers, like, please, like, just know that that's like the best description ever. Because I find like I have so many people in my life who I feel like have, you know, who aren't people who are under 25. I feel like people who are under 25, this conversation has simply been so much part of their, more part of their world, that they might have been able to say, hey, that thing kind of sounds like me. Right. Where I feel like people over 25, like 25 to 40, maybe, but I feel like most people over 40, like this wasn't even... these terms weren't really out there. Like the only thing that we saw when we were younger, you know, were the kids who were in special ed.
Right.
And they were probably like nonverbal. Like they were the really, really extreme version of these things that needed all that beautiful support to come around them. But that like half my school probably had this. Yeah. And like, you know, when I think about the people who are so good at one thing or another, and I start looking at those attributes that I understand now that I know people who have Asperger's, I'm like, oh yeah, I see you.
Yep. Well, and especially for older women growing up, autism was a boy disease. It was boys have it. The thing is that women, girls are socialized differently, so we're very much put on the track to learn how to socialize.
Yeah.
So you hear about autistics having you know, their passions or their special interests. Well, for a lot of young autistic girls, as a survival mechanism, learning how to socialize becomes that special interest as a matter of survival. It's a survival.
No, as a matter of survival. I think that that's correct.
In fact, growing up, I went to three separate child psychologists, and all three of them, two of them in different states, they were in entirely different states, that said, yeah, it's like talking to an alien who's been sent here to observe the world. She's fine. She has anger issues. But she's fine. She's just a little strange.
Wow.
Can you describe autism any more clearly than that?
But also, like, on so many levels, like, how cruel.
Right.
You know, to just say, you know, you're just angry and strange. And, like, so one of the funny things, you'll love this, that, like, when I was in high school, I was one of the weird kids. And just don't have a lot of concern about people thinking I'm odd, because people have always said, like, the thing I heard going through high school was, you're weird. And I realized that the people around me who I really enjoyed liked the weird. And right. So when someone would say that to me in high school, and I've told my kids this so many times, they're just like, yes, mom, we know, someone would say, like, you're weird. And I would look at them and I'd say, no, I'm strange. And half the people would kind of like get the big eyes and back up.
Yeah.
And then the other half would bust out laughing. And I'm like, we can be friends now. You know? Yep.
When my daughter was little, she was the weird kid, the strange kid.
Yep.
That kind of happens when you're a child who grows up around science fiction conventions in the SCA.
Yep.
So she came home one day, she was in tears because the kids were picking on her because she was weird. I said, okay, so you want a normal life? She's like, yes, I want to be normal. I was like, okay, we have to give up the SCA. We have to give up science fiction conventions. We have to give up all these weird things that we do so we can be normal. Do you want to do that? She was like, well, no. I was like, okay, cool being weird. We do cool stuff. She's like, yeah. I said, okay, so the next time those kids tell you you're weird, you smile at them and you say, thank you.
And yep, then exactly.
He came home a couple days later. She said, Mom, I did it. I did it. I said, it was, I,
yeah,
the conversation.
You're like, what did you do?
What did you do? And she said, they called me weird. And I said, thank you. I said, and what did they do? She said, they just kind of walked away.
Yes.
Yes. That's the whole yep. idea. I mean, if you agree with them, what are they going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. So I love that, you know, and I definitely, you know, hear so much of, you know, things I've gone through in my life is, you know, echoes in yours, you know, all that kind of stuff. Okay. So this is one of my favorite questions. What is your superpower? And you said that there are two that are tied together.
Yes. And this is, we've kind of figured out this is probably a, what's the word I'm looking for? A part of the autism.
Mm-hmm.
I am a hyper 3D visualizer. I don't have to close my eyes to see things in 3D. I can be looking at it out in front of myself. So when I'm working on a hyperbaric chamber, I can actually visualize it out in front of myself. I can turn it around. I can blow it apart. I can dive into it. So what I'm seeing in front of my face, would the best way to describe it would be like Tony Stark with his gloves working on something in the air. That's how solid it is for me. And there have been times at work where we've been working with clients and Bart has been doing the talking as the engineer. And I'm sitting at the table waving my hands around, moving things around, and I'm describing what I'm doing to the clients. And I'm like, wait, hold on a second. You can't see this. And I turn around. I use my hands to grab the thing that's in front of my face, turn it around and say, here, and point at it. And Bart's been like, Krista, they can't see it. Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
Hang on. You know,
because
it feels that real.
It's that real to me, but it makes working in 3D CAD easy for me.
Right. Well, because for you, it's so easy to see if it's right.
Right. And the problem is CAD is so clunky for me because I can do it like,
well, in your head.
I can do it in my head. So when I have to do it in CAD, it takes more steps and it's like, ugh. But I will be sitting there working on something and it doesn't look like I'm doing anything because I'm just sitting there with a cup of coffee.
Right.
Staring.
But you're working on it in your head.
I'm working on it in my head. And then I'll get to a point where it's like, okay, now I can put it into CAD. But I also did that with my artwork. I would sit there and stare at a canvas for days. And then,
because you'd be working on it in your head.
I'd be working on it in my head. And then I would sit down and, you know, it's done. And I didn't realize, it took me most of my life to realize that most people don't function that way.
Well, and like Krista, even listening to you talk about art, so I'll share something personal about myself, which is really kind of funny, and something I kind of stumbled on like just a couple of weeks ago, kind of like one of those like clarifying moments. Like I knew it, but like 2 weeks ago, I'm like, oh, I figured something out. But listening to you talk about like even your process about the canvas, when I think about all the art classes I've ever been to or the way people are taught to do art, you know, whatever the doing looks like, that the way you paint is wrong.
Yes.
You're not sketching with a pencil. You're not trying to do layers. You're not building it out slowly. You're doing all the pre-work in your head.
Yes.
Because most people, and because most people can't do that, or if they try to do that, it doesn't work.
Right.
And the funny thing for me is I just realized a couple of weeks ago, like, and listening to you describe stuff, I'm like, oh, I do that. I do that. Oh, other people
don't
can't do that. But like, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, because I sew and do costume design. So really fun other conversation we'll eventually have. But like, I was describing something and I was having a conversation with her. And one of them was about an acquaintance of mine, where we were talking about this visualization thing. And I was like, well, you know, when I say, you know, a blue vase, you know, do you get a picture of a blue vase? And he's like, well, sort of, like, I mean, I know what a blue vase looks like. And I said, well, if I tell you the blue vase has, you know, a Ming Dynasty white pattern on it, does it change? And she's like, well, no, because I don't see anything. And I'm like,
and I have a Ming vase now sitting here on my table. You're describing it. And I just placed a Ming vase there that the cats can't kill.
Ta-da! But like, I was like, wait, you can't see it. It doesn't change? It doesn't change at all? And she's like, no. And I was like, oh, the more detail you give me, the more my vase changes in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I do all of my best design work in my head. I don't sketch it. I work with it. It all comes through my head. I don't do any of that. And like, I had no idea that that was not something most people could do up until like 2 weeks ago. Like, I mean, I knew most people couldn't do it, but like, I didn't understand that they actually couldn't do it. Not like they were better or worse, but like, this does not occur in your brain.
Right. Well, if there's, when I found out there are people who can't visualize it all in their brains, I've got a couple.
I feel so sad for them.
I'm like, how do you live like that? It's like being blind. To me,
yes.
The concept to me is like,
it's like being blind.
It's like being blind. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine trying to do any of the clothing design I do if I had to actually sketch it all out.
Right.
I mean, it'd be torturous to do that.
Right.
I haven't, and people are like, well, why don't you need to? And I'm like, it's in my head. I don't need a sketch. I can see what it's supposed to look like. And while I'm working on it, if it's not working, I just know what to change.
Right. Right.
So it feels like this irrelevant step.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of how I felt all through school. It's like, why are you making me do all these irrelevant steps? I got you the answer. Why do I need to show you the 20 steps it took me to get there? I got you. Is that the correct answer? Yes or no? It is. You have to show your work. Why?
Yeah.
I'm actually understanding the why more now that I'm working in the engineering world.
Yeah. But like, when you know the why and you can get there and you're not just doing it as a perfunctory, just do it over and over again, where it's getting it to be rote memory, you're like, oh, I understand this. And it can be helpful to express the path.
Right.
You know, this is how I got here. But I love that. I love that. Like your like 3D-ness is even goes beyond mine. I realize like, maybe I need to work on that somewhere.
Well,
it sounds like fun.
When I was little, I mean, I can look back now how this highly specialized feature I have was built from the time I was little. Like, my mom and dad would put me in, you know, sit me in my high chair, give me paper and markers or crayons.
Yep.
And that's where it started. And then dad having me work on the drawings, and he would take me to work and hand me off to the designers.
Yeah.
Back in the day when they were still doing all the drawings by hand, and they would teach me stuff. So I just had this lifetime of
information download.
Information download that was both art and technology.
Yeah.
That built this form of Linux that I have.
Yes.
And what Bart noted to me more recently was that when I get into that hyper-visualization, I lose my ability to vocalize, to use words.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's also an effect of the autism, because words are not my first language. visualization is. The pictures are, I mean, my brain is a constant clutter of, I mean, I can have entire conversations and GIFs and memes because that's what's in my head. That's what it's like for me all the time.
Yeah.
And colors and sounds but words are rarely going on up in there. I really have to, it takes a lot of work.
That's work.
That's work.
How fascinating.
But I have such a rich life because of people are like, oh, well, you can't verbalize anything. It's like, but I can communicate.
Yeah. That's.
I can still communicate when I'm going nonverbal. I can tell you exactly what I think. Just give me access to memes and gifts.
Oh, I love that. So beautiful.
Thanks so much for listening to Good Life Stories. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit our website at goodlifestories.com for more show notes and additional episodes. Please subscribe and consider rating and reviewing the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts to help others connect to us. Who do you know with a good life story? I would love to hear from you. Good Life Stories, creating connection, one story at a time.